Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, I'm Julian Morgans, and you're listening to What It Was Like, the show that asks people who have lived through big, dramatic events what it was like. Hi, and welcome back. As you'll know, because you just clicked on it, today's episode is about a woman who had sex in an MRI machine for science. Yeah, it's a pretty funny headline, but that bit at the end there about it being for science, that's not a joke. This experiment was first carried out in 1991, when the internal specifics of vaginal intercourse were still kind of speculative. As in, you know all those illustrated books that you grow up with as a kid about when mummy and daddy love each other very much, and you know those diagrams of men fitting inside women. Those diagrams, for the longest time, they were based on assumptions because no one had ever had sex in an MRI machine before. MRI stands for magnetic resonance imaging, and it allows us to see inside the human body, a bit like an X-ray, except that MRIs can pick up details in soft tissue. So like muscles, brains, or in this case, reproductive organs. MRI machines came into existence in the 1980s, so in the early 90s, they were still a new technology. We were still figuring out what you could do with them when a guy in the Netherlands had an idea. You're not going to hear from him today, but this study was the brainchild of a man named Peck van Andel. And Peck wanted to know exactly what happens when humans have sex. And surprisingly, this is an idea with a somewhat prestigious lineage. It's believed that Leonardo da Vinci was the first scientist slash artist to draw a cutaway image of a woman's body during sex. He did this drawing that was completed sometime between 1492 and 1494, and it depicts a semi-transparent man pushing his penis into a semi-transparent woman. The woman's body and face, they don't appear in the drawing, just her reproductive tract, which appears as a cylinder leading between her legs to the base of her spine. It's a very old, kind of splotchy sketch, but you can see that the penis, it doesn't bend around any sharp corners. It just goes straight in, then comes straight out. And most diagrams, from tampon boxes to sex ed books, they've depicted sex in this same way ever since. Except, as the MRI experiment uncovered, that is wrong. So I'm just going to do a little spoiler here because it's a bit complicated when we get to it in the interview, but I want you to understand what we're talking about. So the image that was produced in this study, in the MRI study, it's in black and white. It's like this black and white X-ray of a penis inside a vagina, and it revealed a few surprises. First of all, vaginas don't travel in at a diagonal angle as Da Vinci and everyone else had assumed. They lead pretty much vertically up into the body. So penises get forced into an upward bend. Or more specifically, men have been yielding to the female form since the dawn of time. And the second thing that this study uncovered is just how prudish and misogynistic medical academia can be. Because, surprise, a study about sex, it was pretty controversial, and we'll hear about that today. My guest today is Ida Sabolis, and I'll let her introduce herself. But she was the one who in 1991 agreed to climb into an MRI machine with her partner and get it on. And we'll hear what Ida learned about anatomy, but also what she learned about her relationship. Because, as you can imagine, not all couples can have sex in an MRI machine and stay together to this very day. So, in some ways, today's episode is a love story. So, I bring you Ida Sabolis. Hey, Ida. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Julian. Nice to see you here.
It's nice to see you. Introduce yourself. Just give me a couple of short bullet points on who you are and what you think about.
Okay. My name is Ida Sabolis. I was born in Haarlem, the original, in the Netherlands. I had two careers, one as a social worker trainer, and the other career after that, I became an organizational anthropologist on feminism, on in and exclusion, on diversity, but also on time and temporality in organizations. And in between that, those two, I hit the topic that we're talking about today, the MRI research in the early 1990s.
Okay. So tell me about how this topic that we're discussing today, how did this first come into your life?
It came into my life because one of the friends from my first career, Truus Pinkster, lives with a man called Peck van Andel. And Peck van Andel is the maverick researcher in the Netherlands. And he was introduced to the MRI machine. And as a dirty mind is a joy forever, he thought, we can picture anything with that. We can look into anything. So he got the idea that maybe it would be nice to make intercourse between a man and a woman visible, because then you could finally look inside. And as a scientist with a classical background, of course, he knew the pictures by Leonardo da Vinci. So he went looking for people who could probably do that. And as we were friends, and at the time, Joop and I were acrobats. So we did amateur acrobat shows and things like that. And he saw us doing one of those shows, so he thought, they could fit into that MRI tube, because it's a very tight tube and you still have to move and you have to be somehow a bit, you know, lean to do that.
Yeah. So Joop, he was your boyfriend at the time.
He's still my partner. He's my life partner, yeah.
He's your life partner. That's beautiful. Okay, and Peck, you describe him as a maverick researcher.
Yeah. Always looking for the unexpected. He never fits into a big medical team where everybody does his part. He has to think for himself and figure out stuff, and he's very creative in that.
So Peck, the maverick researcher, he's introduced to an MRI machine, and then he's carrying this idea around, and he sees you and Joop as acrobats, and he thinks, hey, these might be the right guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
And of course, we knew each other, so Truus and I go back to the feminism of the 1970s. We attended each other giving birth. I was there when Peck's youngest son was born. And we knew each other very well. Always had been very open about, you know, the facts of life. So it's important to stress that, because we now live in a time of, I would say, a lot of prudism again. So a lot of prude people and a lot of fear about talking about sexuality and bodies and experiences. So it's important to stress that we come from that background.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting. So Peck has this idea, and I understand that he gave you a phone call.
Yeah. He said, hey, would you not be interested? And I said, what? What do you want us to do? You know, this would be so interesting. This would be, very enthusiastic. And we never had the opportunity of looking inside bodies. And now we can finally see what's really happening and so on and so forth.
What was your immediate reaction?
No. No way. But then, of course, it's no way first. And then you start thinking. And I thought, well, maybe we could. But then I decided that there was going to be one condition under which I would do it, and that was if I was going to be a co-author, because I wanted to have a say in whatever was going to happen with the material, whatever was going to happen with publications and all that.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, so what happened next?
What happened next was that I got acquainted with Edward Moriart, the other gynecologist, and Edward asked me all kind of things about if I was complete and things like that. I mean, of course.
Complete?
Yeah, because if you had an operation or something, I was almost 40 by that time, and of course I'd given birth. But if I remember him asking, but you are complete, aren't you? You have everything. You have, yeah, like a uterus and everything. So we can see the full picture. It was very technical from his side at the beginning. And of course, with them, I also had to negotiate that I was going to be on the team.
Yes. Were they reluctant to let you in?
No, because I was quite firm in saying that's my condition. It was not going to happen if I hadn't.
Okay. All right. So take me through to the day. Now, I'm imagining when you woke up that morning, you might have been a bit nervous.
Yes, of course. We were all nervous, yeah. And it was like sneaking into the hospital. It was quite exciting. And it was all empty and there was no personnel and there were no other people, no babies at all. So it was really like sneaking into the building and doing something hidden.
I'm assuming Peck negotiated access to the MRI?
No, we had full access. That's not the point.
Okay.
And I think one of the two other doctors came into the came and opened the door for us and introduced us, and we had a coffee first, and we were going to look at the machine first if we were going to fit in at all. It's a big tube. It's a big round tube with a diameter of, 70 centimeters or something. So it's quite tight. And people are put on kind of a sledge and then shoven into that tube. So we put ourselves on that sledge and tried to get into the tube, and it didn't work at all. So we had to remove parts of the machine and the sledge to fit into the machine. That was basically what we did for half an hour, you know, puzzling how we were going to get in.
Keep going. Just keep telling the story.
So, I mean, that was quite funny. And by that time, there was a good atmosphere and we felt very adventurous and what have you. And then we said, okay, now we're going to do it. So I had a little microphone in my hand, I think. And there was a sound box in the machine, so to give instructions to a patient also. I think they put a curtain up on the big window screen that looks into the room from the control room. Between control room and room, there's a window. And they had put a blanket up, and I thought, okay, well, if you're going to look at it inside, you might as well see it outside as well. But okay, it felt somehow private, so that was okay. Yeah. And Joop and I wriggled into that machine and started doing our thing. And we were very much aware that you have to know each other very carefully.
What do you mean by that?
You have to, in your sex life, not everybody is always fully aware of what the other feels and wants and how the other functions. So, and we knew mainly the male part of the whole exercise is to keep it up, hey? And so we knew that we somehow had to stimulate Joop, but it's a two-way thing, obviously. And maybe we also discovered in that tube and afterwards that we know each other very well, and that our sex life was technically very sound. So.
You'd practiced. You'd practiced for this moment.
Oh, yes, we had practiced. But practicing is not, it's conscious practicing. It's being conscious about what happens in your own body and with the other.
I mean, was this romantic? Was there kissing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, romantic. It was not very romantic. It was hilarious. So we said, it is between having an act of love and doing a performance.
I mean, was Joop scared? Was he nervous? As the man in a situation like that, I would be terrified.
Yeah. No, he wasn't terrified because we had prepared that. I mean, we had prepared in the sense that we talked about it a lot. And we talked about it a lot, how we were going to do it, but it functioned. It worked.
I mean, I hope I'm not laboring the point here, but when you say we had a plan, was the plan literally like, hey, let's get on this sled together
and we'll have fun.
Yeah, that was about as that was about complex
it.
As yes, the plan.
Yes. But I did realize afterwards that we know each other so well that yeah. that was the precondition so that we could say, between brackets, perform.
Yeah, yeah. And were you claustrophobic at all in this tiny tube?
I am claustrophobic in other situations, but not in this tube. No, not at all.
Did it get hot and uncomfortable?
Very warm. Very warm. Yes. I mean, and this machine is also very loud. So it was hilarious in that sense. I mean, there's big magnets in that machine that go boom, 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 boom. Very, very loud. So, and then you have to hold. I mean, this was one of the first MRI machines. So taking the picture took some time. And then there was the command, more or less, from the control room, keep it like that, you know, and keep it like that for, I don't know, a minute. And that was, okay. I mean, that was, of course, the most difficult part of it. But it worked.
You were in like a spooning position, right?
We were vis-a-vis first and after that in a spooning position. But we said, do spooning position because that's easiest. But they said we want a missionary position, so face to face.
Because why did they have a preference?
They did have, because the original drawing by Leonardo da Vinci is in a vis-a-vis position. It's a missionary position.
It's a missionary position.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Okay.
Well, it is. You don't see in the original drawing by da Vinci, you don't see people. Yeah, you see people into each other, but you see them vis-a-vis. And this is maybe one of the markers already of the gendered manner that these images are always presented. So we did that position. I think afterwards we also did the spooning position. But the image that went around the world after the research and was the vis-a-vis position.
Okay. Do you remember any particular moments of conversation?
Well, there were two very important moments that I remember. And one was the moment that after they had taken the picture, they instructed us through the microphone, through the system that you can now do whatever you like. Like, you know, get it over with or whatever, or get your orgasm if you like. And of course we didn't do that, but I mean, we were just, it was hot in there, it was sweaty, and we were eager to get out at that point. But and the other moment was when they put up in the control, when we were back in the control room, they put up the picture and we saw that picture for the very first time. And that was indeed the experience of footsteps in fresh snow. I mean, that was major to see each other, to see us, you know, fitting together on that big screen. The picture of us fitting together on the big screen was just miraculous. It was fantastic.
Hey, we're just going to take a quick ad break, but we'll be back with more What It Was Like.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
All right, so, you know, grand reveal. Describe to me what it looked like and how you felt.
I think, and everybody who can see the picture, it was very, very pretty. And of course, it was the very first picture that one we saw. We have seen other pictures later. It was very, very pretty. And my immediate reaction was, see, it's the position of the penis within the women's body goes from below up instead of diagonal position. The original drawing by Da Vinci, you have to remember, is where the male penis is pictured more or less diagonally into the woman's body. And as any woman can probably tell you, it feels like vertical.
And
so that was my very first thing. And that, I mean, this is the female part. And that was what I saw, immediately saw. Whereas the three men in the room immediately saw, wow, there's this boomerang. So the male part of the thing, the penis of the man, has an extension into the male body that together with the penis makes it kind of a boomerang. Hello, Australia. Kind of a boomerang shape of the penis. And that feature was, until today, one of the most iconic outcomes of that research. Wow, the boomerang. I mean, it was also in headlines, in papers later. The boomerang penis and what have you. Actually, especially reflecting on it now, it was very important that there were men and women in the room, and men's eyes were clung to something different than women's eyes. We saw different things.
Yeah, well, I guess that makes sense. You're looking at the parts of the photo that impact you most directly.
Of course, yeah. No, it's logical, but it's not logical that also in publications afterwards, it was the male part that was being stressed most.
Got it. Yeah, absolutely. The thing that stands out to me is the way that the penis sort of conforms and is contorted by the female body. You know, it's not the woman sort of making way for the man. The man just sort of bends around inside the woman. And I think that's something that gets overlooked.
Yeah. I mean, I must admit, this was one of the first researchers where they really realized that there is also, on the part of the women, there's a far bigger part inside the women's body, a woman's body, that is affected by arousal. the clitoris goes to two sides within the woman's body with nerves, and that is a far bigger area actually than they ever thought. And that's also one of the side outcomes of this type of research.
Yes. You described the photo as really pretty before.
Yeah.
What's pretty about it?
Pretty is, it was emotional for me because it's not just emotional. It's the first time looking into a body in that manner. We're seeing all the details in your body, seeing your bladder, seeing everything so detailed. And that was the very first time ever, and it was us. So that that was what made it pretty.
Did you see some aspect of your relationship with Joop inside that photo?
Yeah. We always said we wanted to have that picture over the couch at home, and we never had it. At that moment, we said that, but we never had it, and it's fine.
Okay, so the other thing that I know about this photo was that it revealed for the first time the way that the female bladder fills up during sex. Can you tell me about that?
And women always knew that, but it's somehow we're not sure. It somehow seems to have a function, but we can't see.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know.
So when you first got this photo back and there was a big full bladder, I mean, you know, the fact that you were stuck in an MRI machine for an extended period of time, that aside, you're saying that women during sex, the bladder fills up, and it's still to this day a bit of an unknown thing, but it was only discovered.
Well, maybe some, I don't know. I don't keep my medical research up to date. So maybe somebody found that out in the meantime, but I don't know.
Okay. Okay. So let's move this along. What happened next?
What happened next was that, of course, we wanted, the team wanted to publish. So there was an article written. I don't know the exact details of how, where he sent it in and where it was refused, but it was refused. So in traditional quantitative research, you can't have a one case result. So it had to be repeated. The result had to be repeated. And it took a couple of years also because of the sensitivities around using the MRI machine. And somehow the message got out that year that this research had happened.
Okay, it was leaked to the press.
There was a link to the press somehow, and the major papers brought it as a scandal, an MRI used for rubbish and things like that. And so then it was difficult to find another place. And it took, it took 3 or 4 years to have another hospital that, or another MRI that we that they could repeat the research in. It took also long to repeat it because other people were invited to do the research. And this is where something else happened, where couples just came in and said, "Oh, that's easy peasy. We do piece cake. We'll do that." And I realized that these people were guinea pigs. They were not involved in the research. They didn't have agency over the room. They didn't have agency over the MRI machine. So they couldn't, they just were instructed to go in, do their thing, and have a picture taken. So that was my second conclusion, that if you're treated as a guinea pig, that your performance is different.
Yeah. That says to me a lot about just the nature of communication. I mean, all the way through to consent in a sexual relationship. Yeah, to your point, if you don't have any agency in a relationship or certainly in a sexual situation, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. No, it doesn't work that way. So that's another layer of the research that has not been elaborated from the research. But it was very telling. It was very, very telling. So it took a long time until there were so many cases. Actually, it took, I think, almost 8 years until there was Viagra, the pill, because so many couples thought they could do it, but there were only very few who could. So it took quite a long time. It took all the way to 98 or 99 until it could be, the full results of the research could be published. because of non-performance. And Viagra, of course, helped to keep it up, so to speak. And then so many pictures could be taken.
Wow. So not a single man through all those years could get it up the way Joep could.
Joep could. Yes. I mean, I do think it's cooperative, but yes. I mean, very few could. Very few could, and not enough could. So it took all the way until Viagra came to have enough cases to show.
Can I ask, how did Joep respond to this news?
He did not. He said, "Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know how I did it.
I don't know what's special about that." But yeah.
Yeah, he sounds like a matter of fact Dutch man.
He's German.
Is he?
He's German. Yeah.
It's even more matter of fact than the Dutch.
He's a builder. Okay. He's quite a down to earth, quiet person. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So. I'm also curious, when this was leaked to the press, how did your friends and family respond? Because you're at that time the only woman who had gone through with this. What was the response?
Well, I had notified my family and friends and the children. I said, look, there's something special going on. You know, we're always, like, especially in our profession, the fly on the wall, or we're very curious. And I want to tell you something about a research project that I'm involved in. I think you should know this before it gets to the press.
And what was their response?
Giggle. Giggles. Oh,
just
that's
giggles.
You again. Oh, I could have expected that. If from anybody, I could have expected that from you. My mom was not very chuffed, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, different. I guess she was born in a different period.
Absolutely.
And your children?
They were happy to know it. And they were, of course, we had shared the whole process with them.
The kids might have felt differently if you'd hung that big MRI picture above your couch in the living room.
Absolutely.
Okay, all right. So finally, the study gets published in 1999.
Yes. In the Christmas issue of British Medical Journal, yeah.
Okay. Interesting that they slipped it into the Christmas edition.
They tend, as far as I know, they tend to have kind of special themes in their Christmas issue.
Okay. And this one was what? Sex?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's always, I mean, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So what was the response when it was finally published?
The first thing I knew that was we were going to have the Ig Nobel Prize the year later, because at that moment after it was published there was kind of, you know, compliments from colleagues or whatever. But
right.
I mean, the point is also that these days you could never do it again like that, because research is now bureaucratized throughout. Ethical committees looking at everything, mainly at liability of the universities. So it would never be possible to do it again like that, to do any research like that again, because there's so much caging in of that type of research that universities wouldn't dare doing a thing like that, I think, at the moment.
You say that in a way that suggests that you think it's a bad thing.
Oh, yes, I think it's a bad thing that universities have gone so far in gearing up all kind of bureaucratic procedures for so-called ethics, as if scientists would be unethical unless you cage them in. And I've had some, it's more than 30 years ago now. And I started my career as an academic, and I now retired with some aftermath. But I've seen universities becoming cages. I mean, cages of bureaucratic neoliberal ways. And well, that's a pity, because that type of maverick research is hardly possible, especially in the way we did it back then.
Got it. Okay. Okay, so take me through the next couple of years. This thing that you participated in, what did it mean for you, and how's it affected your life?
With hindsight, I am very, very happy that we we were very open about it from the start. And we shared, like you just asked, we shared it with our children and with our peers and with our friends and with colleagues. What happened at the university where I worked was that the Ig Nobel Prize came in 2000.
What is that?
The Ig Nobel Prize is kind of an alternative Nobel Prize. They give a prize to all kind of categories like medical research, economic humanities and all that for research that makes you laugh first and makes you think later. That's the Ig Nobel Prize. So it's okay. About serendipitous research. I mean, I'm in a department where we have two Ig Nobel Prizes now. A colleague of mine 2 years ago, 3 years ago, received that for a research on gossip.
Wow, that's fantastic.
That was also fantastic. But I think we're one of maybe we're the only department in the world that has two Ig Nobel Prizes under one roof.
Yeah, this sort of interesting crossover between art and science, I think may have gone some way to win you a Ig Nobel Prize. I mean, to your point, I think in the last couple of days when I've said to people, hey, I'm gonna do this interview and here's what the story is about, you know, people kind of, they initially laugh. Yes, you're right. They giggle. There's a bit of a giggle.
Yeah,
funny. Yeah. That's funny. But then there's a second look. There's a bit of a pause and there's a second look that comes over people's faces, which is like, huh, and what does that look like? You know, it sparks curiosity. Yeah, I'm just simply agreeing with you. I think that is the deeper kind of mystery and beauty to this study. So you're retired now. You've done a lot of studies. You've done a lot of academic work. You've learned a lot. You've seen a lot. How does this episode fit in the rest of your life?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a very dear episode. It's still very dear to me, and I'm still very proud that we did it and the way we did it. It's always there in the back of my mind somewhere.
So you've never had a part of your life where you regretted partaking in this?
No, never.
I think that's great.
Why would you think I would?
I think life is just full of naysayers. Eventually, there's someone who wants to make you to feel bad about something you've done, and I'm saying it's great that you didn't succumb to that. Okay, and so, what's the curiosity that's been driving you all these years, and how did this study fit into that?
Well, I must, of course, with hindsight, I must admit that curiosity led to the research at the time, and thinking out of the box is important. I mean, in my field, organizational anthropology, organization studies, thinking out of the box is the gadget for all kind of consultancies around the world. But really thinking out of the box is sometimes quite confronting.
Yeah. I mean, by participating in this study, you're admitting to the world that, hey, yeah, I find this aspect of sex interesting. And that in itself is a somewhat spicy admission.
Well, spicy admission, not if you're a feminist, if you want to know about the female parts and if you want to, you know, if you want to stress the importance of female sexuality. I mean, male sexuality is always far more visible, isn't it? So as a feminist, it's important to stress the female part of that whole process.
Yeah, tell me a little bit more about the way that you see feminism and female sexual empowerment through this study.
Well, first of all, of course, the positioning as discussed, the vertical positioning of how it feels to how penetration feels, but the whole female part of sexuality is far less visible, isn't it? And we as feminists, we always fought for more visibility and for calling vagina a vagina and all those themes that are recurring again now. So I think that was always my background, and it's still, I can see that it's still very important today. But the feminism is always under attack. So the position of women is always under attack. If we don't maintain the struggle, there's always backwards movements.
Do you think that on some small level this MRI experiment contributed to leveling the playing field, that it somehow contributed to equality?
I don't know. I don't think it did, because look at the level of giggling around the study. So Yeah. I hope it did. Yeah. It of course, it's one of those building blocks, a small building pebble, perhaps, in that debate. But it didn't change the world. No, of course not.
Is it your most heavily cited? Is that the word for cited?
Cited.
Cited. Thank you. Work, is that?
No. Yeah. There's other work that's been cited more often. Yeah.
Okay.
But it's high up on the list. It is high up on the list. Yes.
It's in the top 10. Yeah. It's charting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Ida, I have loved this and it has been such an interesting conversation.
Pleasure.
And it's so great to see you. And I just can't thank you enough.
Let's maintain our curiosity.
Let's do that. Yeah, absolutely. Today's episode was produced by Rachel Tuffery. It was mixed by Jimmy Saunders, who also did our theme music. Evie Atkins is our intern. Our cover art is by Naomi Lee Beveridge. And this whole thing has been a Super Real production.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.